Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Plus Four podcast, exploring the big wide world of Hickory Golf. I'm your host, Rob Berman. Episodes of this podcast reflect the personalities, the passion, and the pursuit of the game as it was played in the pre-1935 era across the world. Please subscribe and hit the like button to help us build our network of golfing fans coordinated in the United States through the Society of Hickory Golfers, and visit us online at plus4.org. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your patience as episodes of the pod have been scant over the last year. In my day job, I've quietly been working on raising $20 million to help rehabilitate 15 World War I era buildings here in the Pacific Northwest that are home to the nonprofit that I manage. On top of that, my landlord there is in receivership, and we just finished celebrating our 50th anniversary over the last 12 months. It's been a very busy time. I'm happy to say, however, that we have a series of new episodes coming out this month and next, including an in-depth interview with author Roger McStravick on his new book on Alan Robertson. That'll be out the week of Christmas, so please stay tuned. To get things started, delighted to share this conversation with today's special guest. Wisconsinites are known for their kindness, right? Think Bon Iver, Steve Stricker, Gene Wilder, you get the idea. Well, Clark Willard, now head golf professional at the Lido Golf Club, part of Sand Valley Resort in Wisconsin, has that positive vibe. Though not a native, it makes him a great fit for the state. Willard found religion, so to speak, in Hickory Golf. Like so many, the connection to history and the allure of the game as it was meant to be played got its claws into him. Now he's in a unique position to spread the word about the sport, and he's delivering on that mission in spades. Clark set up a Hickory Golf workshop right in the pro shop at the Lido, and he encourages guests and members alike to have a go with the antique relics of the past. Whether first-timer or semi-pro golfer, all are welcome, and all Willard cares about is opening the gateway to experience a piece of the tradition and history of the game. In this episode, we talk about his career path through several years at Pacific Dunes in Oregon to its sister resort in Nakusa, replete with layouts from Bill Corr, Ben Crenshaw, Tom Doak, Brian Schneider, David McClay Kidd, and others. Sound familiar? Oh yeah, Sand Valley is also owned and managed by the Kaiser family, sons Michael and Chris. Clark talks about his admiration for old Tom Morris and his recent foray into agronomy and golf course maintenance in the past year, all part of becoming one of the most well-rounded pros in the game today. Well, Clark, thank you so much for joining me on the Plus Four podcast. I'm excited to talk to you today. Many of us have seen the short film about you. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But my good friend John Henry Williams mentioned you to me, and I'm excited to hear more about you.
Well, I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, sure. First of all, Clark's a distinctive name. Is that a family name?
It is. My father's aunt, her maiden name was Clark. So that's how I got it.
Okay. And where did you grow up?
I grew up in Jacksonville, North Carolina. So it's down towards the coast, about an hour north of Wilmington.
Okay, what a great golf place. I used to drive from Louisville over to play in the Carolinas anytime I could.
Yeah, we're pretty fortunate down there.
Yeah. And what about athletics when you were young? Were you a multi-sport kind of a guy?
Yeah, we played a lot of soccer growing up, and then I played some football in high school. We spent a lot of time at the beach more than anything. And then in 10th grade, I started playing golf. I had a friend a grade above me that was going and got me into it. And so I was a little bit of a late bloomer for the high school scene, but that's how I got into golf.
And is this in the 1990s, maybe?
Yep. So, well, I guess 2000s. I graduated in 2009 from high school. Yeah.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, it was just through that one friend. Nobody in my family played. And, he talked me into it. And the guys on the team were very kind. And we didn't have a very large team. So, I was able to get going to the matches pretty soon after dedicating some time and figuring things out a little bit.
And then what kind of a path leads somebody through high school to study what you studied and eventually into a full-time career in the industry?
Yeah, it whimsical may not be the exact word I'm looking for, but that same friend wound up going to NC State for their golf management program, and we were good buds, and I went up to visit him a few times, and when they told me I could go, anywhere through for my internships, because you have to do 16 months of co-ops for your PGA, and that's all the light bulbs were going off. Being a surfer, that seemed like a ticket to some good waves. I knew I wasn't going to be Kelly Slater and I wasn't going to be Tiger Woods, and I probably couldn't afford to play the nicest golf courses in the world. So I figured, hey, get in the business, and maybe I could string it all together and have a great job at a great course by a good surf break.
Now, are there sur is there surfing on the coast of the Carolinas?
Yes, there is. It can be good. It definitely has some long dry spells as well. So not the most consistent surf ever, but yeah, there are some good waves to be had.
I spent 11 years in California, so I know what that lifestyle can be. I don't surf, but I know this lifestyle.
A little more consistent out there,
So
huh?
these days, you're the head golf professional at Sand Valley Resort in Wisconsin. Can we talk about that property for a little bit? You had a long path that led to Sand Valley. Can you just talk us through some of that backstory?
Yeah, so it does all tie together. So I got out to Bandon Dunes through college in 2011. Went out there on an internship for 7 months and later returned to Raleigh, got my degree all tidied up, worked a year in Raleigh, and decided I should go back to Bandon. So that was in 2015. And so worked out there for a year and some change during that stint, and then met this cute gal out there. And she was from Wisconsin and was coming back to help open the property. And so I got up the nerve to ask if I could tag along. And that is now my now wife, Chelsea. So it's really been a fun story. So we moved here in 2016, and she's from the state of Wisconsin, so we're lucky we have some family close.
Was Chelsea working at Bandon, or was she tied in with the Kaiser family?
Yeah, so I guess the long story short is she was working here. Her father's a golf professional as well here in Wisconsin. And she had just graduated college, was working on the beer cart that summer, and met some early adopters that were involved with Sand Valley. And before she knew even, who the Kaisers were, what they were up to, they got her paired up and they liked her and said, "We'd love to have you, but there's not going to be anything to do for a couple of years." So they wound up sending her to Bandon Dunes to cross train. So it's really a neat story. And so she worked a different department every 3 months at Bandon Dunes in preparation to come back and help open Sand Valley. So I was.
What did she do when that resort opened?
She's done a number of things for him. And right at the start, we both worked operations, and then she transitioned into the hotel and lodging operations end of the deal, and I remained in the golf side of things.
Now you worked you said you worked a year in Raleigh, and you worked, I know, at the very beginning in the pro shop at Pacific Dunes, and then you were assistant pro at Pacific Dunes for a while when you went back.
Yep, I was one of the assistants there.
And what courses were under construction at Bandon while you were there? Probably a one or two.
Yeah, I had just missed the construction. When I went there the first time, they just opened Old McDonald. And when I went there the second time, it was a little bit of a lull. So we would go play the Sheep Ranch a lot on our off days, but that was the old Sheep Ranch, the going to Bandon and get the gentleman to open the gate for you, and then bring a grill and some drinks and go have a good time out there. But I am glad that, I'm sad that the old one's gone, but I'm happy that many more people can enjoy that beautiful piece of land out there.
It's phenomenal. And I imagine back then you weren't playing hickory shafts. You were probably playing modern golf.
Right. Yep. I hadn't got into the hickories yet.
We'll get into that, I know. And so again, what year did you go to Sand Valley?
2016.
Okay, so that was a year before that the year before the first course opened at the resort.
Right.
And to me, I haven't visited Sand Valley yet, although I've been in Wisconsin. I've played hickories with the Wisconsin group out there and debated going to Sand Valley, but to me, it's really similar to Bandon Dunes, isn't it? In terms of pedigree, scale, although I would say it has more to offer than what Bandon Dunes does.
Well, they're certainly, they're close enough to be brother and sister, but just like a brother and sister, they have their own unique personalities. So obviously, we're working with great architects. The Kaisers are obviously adept to finding beautiful land, sandy soil, very interesting land to build golf upon. And I do think that the architects obviously very much appreciate that, to have a great canvas to work from. They do
Absolutely.
have very different feels as well. And while we do have a fair amount of wind here in central Wisconsin, the conditions can be, at least during our golf season, a little bit friendlier for golf than Bandon. But that is half the fun of going to Bandon, is to, to you're not you're playing the golf course and versus Mother Nature. So
We're lucky, those of us that live out here in the Northwest, to be able to go there at almost any time. But it doesn't matter what time of year, you could have hail,
And I love the I love tough conditions and playing in the wind. So we get a good bit of that here, but it is a little different.
So just for the listeners' sake, Coren Crenshaw did the first course at Sand Valley. Sand Valley is it a private or a semi-public resort?
Yeah, it's a public resort. We'll host anybody and be happy to have you, but we do have some founders, which were the original investors of the project. So they got great perks, and that helped fund, the initial money the Kaisers needed for that first wave of construction. And then eventually, as the resort made money, they all got their investment back. So it was a great deal for all parties, a real win-win. And then as we went on, not to cut you off, Mammoth Dunes was the next course, which was David McClay Kidd, and then the Sandbox was a par three course by Coren Crenshaw and one of their principal architects, Jimmy Craig. And then they were working on Sedge Valley when COVID started, and they pivoted and moved forward with the Lido project.
Now, you obviously must know Peter Flory. A lot of us have had the chance to meet Peter because of Hickory Golf. Most of us know the backstory of the Lido and Peter's connection with the building of that course. Would you want to put that in your own words, just in a short form?
What I enjoy most about Peter is he can just connect with anybody, and he's obviously a wealth of information. So if you didn't know all the background information, it might catch you off guard to learn, because he's just so casual about it all and so kind with the amount of knowledge he knows. It always comes off very genuine as he is, and he's just a great person to be around and a great person to learn from. And just, everybody that works there obviously super appreciative of all the effort he put in, and he's just a cool guy to hang out with.
He's listed, I see, as the golf course historian at the Lido. You think that's a good title?
I think it is. He's too humble to probably agree with it, but it's a great title for him.
Now, in addition to golf, as I mentioned earlier, the resort offers grass tennis courts, fat tire bicycling, kayaking, canoeing, bocce. I imagine you allow cross-country skiing in the winter there.
Yeah, we get a fair amount of snow. It's not always consistent, but anytime we have the snow available, we will open up those trails. And central Wisconsin is a great place to get outside. It's a little underrated in that regard, which is kind of
Absolutely.
cool. It's not always super busy, but there's lots of water around us here and lots of ways to get outdoors.
The Wisconsin golf scene seems unbelievable to me. I mean, it just seems to get stronger and stronger every decade, doesn't it?
Yeah, and as a transplant, I will admit I had no idea how good the golf was here. And while we do have a short season, it's about 6 months, give or take. But I think that makes everybody more ambitious to get out and play. Sometimes, like in North Carolina, for example, you get lulled into thinking like, oh, I can go play later, and you don't get that feeling up here. You got to get it while you can and enjoy those nice long summer days we get here.
Now, I noticed that the USGA recently announced four big events that in partnership with Sand Valley Resort. The first one being next year, the Mid-Am Championship is going to be at the Lido. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, the course is matured nicely. I think we're prepared. It's going to be a great host. I hope that it's good and windy. Getting the course fast and firm will not be an issue for us. They just installed the Rolex clocks, so it's really
Oh,
starting to
good.
it's starting to feel real. But we're very excited about the USGA events coming, and I think it'll be a great test.
Now, I've played Ballyneal and some other courses that have multiple tee boxes, but none of it's rated. I assume the Lido is rated.
Yes.
Six tee boxes and a course rating and everything else.
Correct. Yep.
Yeah. Nice. So after the Mid-Am in 26, the Lido again is going to host the 2029 Junior Am on the course. 2030, the Women's Mid-Am. I don't know which course that'll be on. Do you know which?
I think that one might be Mammoth. I don't have it in front of me, but I do know Mammoth Dunes is the other course involved.
And then 2034, the U.S. Girls Junior Championship. So that's a big honor, isn't it?
It is. We're excited to be able to host those events.
Now, can you tell us just a little bit about how you got, other than Chelsea, did you connect with the Kaisers at all when you were at Pacific? And was there any influence in getting you to come to Wisconsin on that side, or was it all spousal?
Well, I think I was very interested. Obviously, working at Bandon Dunes, it's a very well-oiled machine. And I was curious what work would go in to get an operation to that point. And boy, I've had a great front row seat. So I expressed interest and they were hiring. And I didn't really deal with the Kaisers much until I got here to Wisconsin. But yeah, I've been fortunate to work many, many different jobs, both within the golf operation and otherwise throughout the whole resort. And we can talk about it later, but I wasn't the Lido Golf Pro this past year. I
Right.
have tried some different things even this calendar year, and they've always been super gracious to me. And I just love learning new things and trying to challenge myself.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Before we get to the Lido stuff, you must have gotten to know Shu when you were at Bandon.
Yeah, Shu's the man.
Can you tell everybody about Shu?
He's one of a kind. He works harder. He's the nicest guy. Photographic memory. When you come on property, he knows who you are and he'll remember you from last time. He takes extensive notes. He gets up way early in the morning to do all his research and go through his notes and jog his memory on every guest. And he's unlike anybody else I've met. And obviously an ace at customer service, and he's just one of those people you look forward to seeing when you come on property. And he just brings so much joy both to the guests and to his coworkers. He's just one of those people you cherish being around.
Absolutely. The first time I went to Pacific, I was playing modern clubs and I was
Okay.
solo and it was all fogged in. And the pro stepped out from behind the counter and went around and played 18 with me, which was extremely nice of him to do. And I didn't play that well because I couldn't even see the holes. It was so thick with fog. But
Yeah.
I broke 80 for the first time in my life on my replay round, probably at Bandon. I forget what course, but he sent me a handwritten note after that, which I thought was so nice of him to do.
Man, that's awesome.
I don't know how much you do you have time to do that kind of thing these days, or is it mostly email?
Yeah, I mean, a handwritten note goes a long way, both when we send them and when we receive them. So that's the cool thing about golf. A lot of those good traditions are still alive.
Well, could you walk us through just a typical day when you were head golf pro at Sand Valley before we get into whatever you've been doing lately?
Yeah, I mean, it all revolves around making sure our guests enjoy their stay, and it depends on what time of year, how long the days are, and obviously being seasonal, majority of our staff is in for 6 months. So early in the season, we're trying to get everybody on the same page. And as the season progresses, we get everything smooth. And that's, those long days, that's your chance to get out and golf a bunch. And then in the fall, with a lot of our help being summer long, be it college students or interns, whatever the case may be, even school teachers, we have a lot helping us. Then you start to lose some staff in the fall. But yeah, we'll be managing the golf shop, making sure our schedules are tidy and everybody's, good with their assignments. Keep our eyes peeled for any big tournaments. We run a lot of tournaments for guests, and then we throw a few ourselves, our Sand Valley Majors, as we call them. But yeah, you're working with and/or responsible. The director of golf would oversee it all, but you have the inside staff, the golf shop, the outside staff, which we handle a lot of that arrival within the golf operation at Sand Valley. When you pull up, you're working with a member of the golf operation. So you've got those teams, the starters, the rangers, working hand in hand
Retail.
with caddy services. Obviously, the caddy experience is a huge part of all the Kaiser properties. So while they have their own department, we all have to work together. And same with lodging and food and beverage. And, for example, when we have a thunderstorm roll through, a good Midwest boomer, Everybody's kind of in it together. We don't want it as much as the guest doesn't want it. But
Right.
yet, the bar gets super busy and people don't want to leave their room at checkout time. And so we're all tied
Right.
together, all the departments.
And then, were you teaching as well?
We do some teaching. Certainly other golf properties, if you have a regular membership or if you're at a public
Right.
course where you see the same folks time and time again. So we do some teaching, not as much as you would at a private club or a public facility where you're seeing the same folks over and over again, and you can build
Right.
that long-term coaching relationship.
Right, that makes sense. Did you happen to listen to the Machinella series, the Club Pro Crisis on the Fire Pit Collective?
I have not, I am pretty familiar with it, but I have not listened to it in its entirety.
Yeah, I didn't either, but I listened to a fair amount of it. I found it pretty compelling, and I just wondered if you haven't listened to it, we don't need to talk about it, but I wondered if it rang true for you. You know, that the industry as a whole, I think, is challenged because of compensation levels, the cost of housing, competition with other career paths, and all the virtual stuff that people are doing these days, you know.
Yeah, yes, with the caveat that no, I have not listened to it. The gist I took from it, I would say that I've seen examples of that ringing true, and then I've also seen plenty of examples that would go to the contrary. So
Right.
I don't know, maybe in another 20 years I can explain it really well, but
And you must have a chance to get out and meet other golf pros. Do you go to the PGA show and things like that once a
yeah,
year?
absolutely. Especially being in
Yeah.
Wisconsin. Florida sounds pretty good in January, but no,
Right.
the Wisconsin section is a great bunch of folks, and to go to the PGA show and see old friends and meet new people is very beneficial for us. We are fortunate here in the Midwest, so that's a great time of year for us to get out, and we're not missing out on a whole lot. Great chance
Right.
to recruit new help as well, and get a lot of the buying done, which we're fortunate at a big facility like Sand Valley. We have a retail buyer and
Right.
things of that nature. So, for a smaller operation, it's even more valuable to go knock out a bunch of your buying for the year as well.
So you're still a pretty young guy. I mean, do you feel that you're sort of typical of the field, or are you sort of advancing at a faster pace than your counterparts?
I think I keep signing myself up for some crazy adventures. So I don't know necessarily how to compare myself. I have been super fortunate to be able to have some wonderful jobs, and
Right.
I count my blessings every day. But yeah, I guess I don't think about that too much. I'm just very grateful for the opportunities I have had, and I have gotten to learn a ton just by the nature of the jobs I've been able to work. So sometimes it's like drinking out of a fire hose, but I wouldn't trade it. And
Right.
to be exposed to so many different parts of the operation and to see them blossom and change and then change and change and change again, and just to have to morph with a growing property, it's taught me a lot, and I've been lucky to observe much more than what I could learn firsthand and just learn from others as they progress as well.
Right. Yeah, you're an incredibly articulate guy, and you know, the film that I mentioned earlier, from the Golfers Journal, there's a gorgeous film by Jason Jahnke that was produced by the Golfers Journal on you and your story. It's incredibly beautiful, and you're so articulate in that. Has that film changed you or changed your outlook in any way?
And Jason, I mean, he deserves the credit. I can get a little off topic from time to time, but no, he's such a nice guy and made me so comfortable with the process. And same to all the folks at the Golfers Journal I've worked with. They were just so kind and so welcoming. But yeah, that was a great experience for me, because it is one of those things where, I mean, nobody's proud to wreck a four-wheeler and ding themselves up that bad. I mean, it's not something that it was a very humbling experience, but at the end of the day, when they asked me if I would do it or be interested, I came down to the conclusion that if sharing that story helped somebody through a time of need or motivated somebody to fall back in love with the game we love, or reach out and help somebody that was going through a hard time, I had a whole lot of folks show me a lot of grace. And I thought, even if at the risk of being vulnerable on a grand scale, if sharing that
Right.
story could help somebody else, either if there was a need, or motivate somebody to help somebody that was in need, I felt like it would be worth putting it out there. And I am glad I did. So I really appreciate them for that opportunity. And I've met a lot of cool folks through it. And, you know, some folks I certainly wouldn't have met otherwise. But that's just a secondary benefit. I just hope that, you know, it somehow leaves the world a little better than we found it was the motivator.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, you're so articulate, and it's really inspirational. I'll put a link to the film in the show notes, so if anybody hasn't seen that short film, it's worth watching. Do you want to talk a little bit about that period in your life? How old were you when that all happened?
I guess I'm happy to talk about it. I'm sorry. I'm doing some reverse math right here. I guess I was in my late, probably 27.
Okay. Oh, okay. And it was an ATV accident. I think you broke your pelvis, among other things, didn't you?
Yeah, I got so wrapped up filming that video. I think I forgot to tell them I broke my neck and my back too. It was
Oh.
wild. So they did like a case study at the hospital about the whole thing. And some of the injuries we didn't find out till later. But long story short, my right leg was spotless, not anything wrong with it. So I
Oh,
did have a
wow.
leg to stand on the whole time. I'm picking. But
I gotcha.
a little comic relief. But yeah, it was a heavy situation. And it was one of those classic, you know, too much energy and not enough time to get it out, and just felt like ripping it up. And,
Right.
you know, got away from me. And, I do still consider it one of the best experiences of my life, and just very grateful. You know, I believe in God, and I think that, his plan is a lot better and more well thought out than mine. And I guess that's faith in a nutshell. I learned to trust things. I learned to accept help. And, but yeah, I was dinged up from head to toe. And very fortunate for all the doctors and nurses and therapists that got me through it. And I'm happy to report that other than some very, very minute details, like I can't sit, you know, cross-legged, you know, crisscross applesauce, as they say. I mean, that's about the remaining effects I have. So,
Oh, good.
yeah, a little less flexible in certain ways, but it's I'm good. So I'm very thankful.
Am I right that you went home and slept on it for a night before you went to see medical care?
Yeah, I can be stubborn, which probably, you know, the joke is that's why my skull wasn't fractured, it's so thick. But no, I was adamant, and I did play off a lot of the aches and pains. And so by the morning I was tired of fibbing about it, and agreed with everyone else I better get in there. It was one of those things where you kind of hope that it's maybe not as bad as it seems. And I was kind of fibbing to everybody, and including myself. And well, the gig was up by morning. That was a bad idea. So very, very lucky that nothing went wrong in that time. And yeah, I
You
appreciate all
said
my
it
friends and
enough.
family for humoring me and letting me duke it out for a little while.
And so, how much time were you recuperating?
I went back to work about 6 weeks later.
Okay.
And then from there, it was, I mean, it was, you know, it was probably a year or two progression for full 100%. But most of it, like I went snowboarding that following winter. So that was really neat. But funny thing about a hip surgery, they make you walk almost immediately. I swore they were in the wrong room, and they assured me they weren't. But yeah, they make you get on it pretty quick because it's good
I
for
know
your
that
bones
that
healing.
yeah, exactly. The weight
Yeah.
helps your bones improve
Yeah.
and get stronger.
Yeah.
There's a clip of the X-ray in the film, and the place where you broke your pelvis, do they do anything for that, or does it just have to heal on its own?
No, they sure do. They got out the hardware. So it's
All right.
right. It's called the trochanter, is that 90 degree turn in your femur there. And so that there's one long rod that goes down all the way to my knee, actually. And then there's a threaded one, like a big bolt that runs through it into the part that would go into the ball area of your pelvis. It's wild, but you know, thank goodness that they had a bunch of smart folks working on it.
That's incredible. So I definitely encourage people to go watch that film. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous film, and it's central to what we're going to talk about here. Because as far as I can tell, Clark, while you were recuperating, a friend of yours from Bandon sent you some Hickory clubs.
Yeah.
And that gave you at least one of many reasons to motivate and want to get out of bed, right?
Yeah. No, it was a tremendous, just a great thing. My good buddy Glenn, who I worked with at Bandon, he
Oh,
had
Glenn
been
Thatcher?
into, yeah,
Oh,
exactly.
yeah. We know
Yep.
Glenn. Yeah.
And yeah, I can't thank him enough. And you know, I love him to death. He has a good abrasive type sense of humor, which we always enjoyed ragging on each other, because I'm kind of a softie, you know. So we, you know, it was like opposites attract. And but yeah, so he sent me some clubs and told me to get
He's a
off my
big
lazy
McGregor guy,
teeth.
isn't he?
Yeah, big time.
Yeah.
Yep. And so yeah, and he, you know, he would coach me through a lot of the tips. And I've always been a tinkerer of sorts, and you know, dabbled with some very not pretty woodworking and such. But also, I knew a lot of club repair from the golf pro side of things, and even you know, in surfing and such, I did always love riding older boards and you know, kind of obscure pieces of equipment. So it kind of was a match made in heaven. And then obviously paired with not being able to work and needing something to do to stay active and especially get my mind off things, it was really this perfect storm of piquing my interest. And I like to say it's been an upward spiral since then, but Glenn
That's
definitely
unbelievable.
taught me a bunch. Yeah, I appreciate him a bunch.
And so, did Glenn send you a complete play set or something like that?
He sent me some kind of some scraps, I think, that had potential, you know, but
Oh,
some
okay.
kind of secondhand stuff that wasn't super desirable, and told me to work on taking them apart and putting them back together. And he would coach me when I had questions. And so I started gathering up a couple tools here and there, nothing super elaborate, but I was able to work on them pretty steady that first summer. And as much as I enjoy playing them, I love fixing them as well.
Now that led to something called Hickory Revival. Can you tell us about that and what that is?
Yeah, it's an extension of that passion we were just mentioning. But I feel strongly, as many of us Hickory golfers do, about how great this version of the game is, and such a great way to appreciate the history of the game. And we're very fortunate to play a game where you can appreciate the history. It's not like we're going to go take a 100-year-old basketball and play on a 100-year-old court, you know. And even if we did, it wouldn't have the same punch. So I just think it's so neat that in golf we can basically hop in a time machine and play these 100-year-old clubs on courses from the same era, and these courses are still relevant and appreciated, and you know, a lot of them are still open. So I just think that part is so special. And yeah, so Hickory Revival is taking that passion and helping introduce it to other golfers. And I mean, we feel strongly it doesn't matter if you even if you never hit one, or if you hit one time, it just to say that you did play a 100-year-old piece of equipment. And if you get the bug like we did, then there's so many people and avenues to go, you know, meet up with and link up. But I'm fortunate, based off of where I've worked, that I get to deal with that 99.9% of the golfers that have never hit a 100-year-old club a lot. And so we're kind of that gateway, and get people interested and let them know that it is a viable option. And like, yeah, you can play these. And hey, if they want to go roll some putts before their tee time and say they putted with the 100-year-old club and walk off with a smile, then you know, at our simplest form, that's, you know, that's what we get off on, is getting people excited about it. And
Now you've got a website. What's the purpose of the website? Do you have members or do you arrange outings or is it just to provide resources?
yeah, so it's a great landing page for us right now. A lot of folks will reach out and contact us and say, hey, I have, you know, XYZ clubs for my dad or granddad, and are they worth anything? Should I fix them? Do you have clubs available for sale or to rent? And what we've focused mostly on over the last year or so is building up an event fleet. So we have been able to put those to work quite a bit, be it Sand Valley and other golf courses as well. So we haven't really been selling too many clubs, but now we're up to about 25 or so sets in our event fleet, and we'll loan them out. The Lido members are getting real curious about it. Obviously, really cool golf course to play Hickory's on, very tough golf course to play Hickory's on, and they can really appreciate what the first batch of Lido members were going through. So that's been a neat avenue. But yeah, the website's a great way to reach out to us. Get in touch. If you ever have any Hickory questions, we'll do our best to answer them. We can answer most of them, and if not, we'll try and pair you up with the right folks. And a lot of times folks are curious about clubs or just meeting people in their area, so they'll reach out to see if we know anybody. And
Well, you have
obviously
a
the
lot of
Facebook
expertise
groups.
in Wisconsin in the Hickory
Yeah.
field.
Absolutely. Yep. There's a great bunch of guys up here. All been super kind and welcoming to me as well.
Yeah, they're incredible guys. I went out and played their Whistling Straits event a few years ago. That's where I met Peter for the first time.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to try to get out to Sand Valley. I just didn't have time because I was coming from the West Coast, but
Yeah.
I want to do that. Let's talk about the Lido for a few minutes. So you mentioned members. The Lido is private, right? It's next to Sand Valley Resort, right? And kind of managed by Sand Valley.
Yeah, you're spot on.
Do you know how many members are there? How many members are at the Lido?
They like to say just the right amount.
Okay.
Yeah,
And they must have out-of-state members, right?
it's very much a national membership.
And you said you were doing some other work in the last few months. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I went out on a limb, and I was fortunate to work and help open the Lido, and it's a great group of folks. And so fast forward to this past golf season, I've always been very curious about the agronomy side of the business. And I did want to see if Hickory Revival could turn into something a little bit more of a than a passion project. Now, naturally, I didn't want to try that and shortchange my duties as the Lido Golf Pro because that's something I cherish very much. And so I went on a total sidestep adventure, and I worked Lido agronomy this for 6 months this year. And then obviously in the afternoons, because you can get done early when you start early. I was working on hickories a lot and trying to get that event fleet together. And we did have some really neat events this year, so I was able to put much more time into the hickories without feeling any kind of guilt or anything, like I was dropping the ball or not giving the Lido Golf Pro position my full attention. So that was my biggest fear, is that I would shortchange something. And I'd always been very curious, and I got to do it at the course that I admire so much, and just to see the Lido from that lens is incredible. And Jimmy, the superintendent, is just, he's a great friend of mine on top of all this, but he was very kind in teaching me so much. He knew I was, hyper curious, so I got to learn. He humored me in all my question asking, but I learned
That's so
more than I could
great.
have ever dreamed in one season. And when you look back at old Tom and the golf pro of the Hickory era, it really was like this little piece that I'd always been curious in but had never been able to tap into. So I'm sure old Tom would be very jealous of all the sweet toys we have to work with. But yeah, it was really neat. I don't think I'm going to jump ship and become a super, but I'm fortunate that my wife was in full support, and Sand Valley was very gracious to me. And well, it sounds crazy because it is crazy, but they were still super cool with it. And I still have the Hickory Revival workshop within the Lido Golf Shop, so I was able to keep that space and spend time there. And when you're working there and somebody has a hickory question, I can just like swing by and answer that hickory question or get them fixed up with a rental set or whatever the case may be. So it kind of worked out great. I was close proximity and got to see all my old coworkers and all the Lido members that I love and cherish. So it made the transition a lot less scary.
What kind of wildlife do you see when you're up at that hour?
Yeah, I mean, gosh, it is so fun to watch the sunrise alone. But yeah, we have many different birds up here, lots of bald eagles, osprey. But yeah, on the golf courses particularly, I mean, we see a lot of tracks in the sand, more so than the critters themselves, but lots of deer, coyotes. Every now and then we'll see a wolf track, but no big
Foxes,
predators.
probably.
What's that?
Foxes? Any
Yeah,
foxes?
those are all over at Sedge Valley.
Oh, cool.
I'm kidding. That's their logo. Yeah. No, but yeah, we do see some foxes from time to time. But yeah, just to watch the world kind of wake up and to be a part of that. I've always been a morning guy, so it just makes me real happy. And I love being outside better than inside, so it's been a fun year.
That's cool. Now, this, I think I know the answer to this question, but people have asked me to ask you this question. Knowing the way that the Lido was constructed with the help of CAD engineering and everything else, does that affect the way that you maintain the course in any way?
It well, I guess I'll try and answer it in order before I get the sidesteps, but yes, certainly there are some features that would not have been built because they are difficult to maintain. And when you think about getting a sprayer on and off the green, and some of this big equipment, the top dresser that we need to get on and off of these green complexes, and they're surrounded by 80, 70 and 80 degree drop-offs, very steep bunker faces. Now, the great news is Tom Doak is very sensitive to this subject, and I think he looks out for the superintendents, as do all these top-tier architects. But they know that super needs to get his equipment on and off of that putting surface. But I think they were able, you know, without compromising any of the integrity of the routing, to give the super just enough space. And I will give Jimmy, the superintendent, a lot of credit for pioneering some of those routings and knowing just how to back up to get that one little portion of the green. And it definitely took some figuring out. But yeah, on any other modern golf course build, the architects are sensitive to the matter that the superintendent needs to be able to take care of the turf and use his equipment.
Am I right? I've seen some photos of Lido. It looks like a lot of recessed areas of grass, not really grass bunkers necessarily, but there seems to be a lot of depressed areas of grass that almost looks like a grass bunker. I don't know if that's the right term. Is
there
that
are
correct?
A couple, what I would say, grass bunkers. And there's also just, there's hardly a flat spot on that golf course. So lots of undulations. And if you ever see a photo of 17 long hole at sunset, that landing zone where your drive hits is one of the coolest parts on property. And as the sun sinks and the shadows start to show off, I mean, it's a great example of what you're talking about. Especially from a drone shot, it's very disorienting. And the fun part is you can't see your golf ball land from that tee shot, so you're kind of robbed of the the Plinko
Well, that's the
board.
mystery. That's kind of the fun, isn't it?
Yeah,
To come over the rise and see what happened.
Yeah.
You get a lot of that at Old MacDonald. You know, you do get that at specific holes on specific courses, which is part of the allure, you know.
Yeah. I mean, go figure Old Mac, you know, CB McDonald. So it checks
Right,
out. He
exactly.
definitely had his own personality.
The first time I stood on that tee box at number one at Old MacDonald, I kid you not, I don't know what it was, but my entire being was filled with a sense of this is where I want to be.
Yeah.
And that suddenly became my favorite course at Bandon Dunes.
Yeah.
Even before I hit a shot, I just, as I stood there, I just felt different. It was incredible. I'll never
Yeah.
forget that feeling.
Yeah,
and I
that's
didn't
a
know
special
anything
golf
about the golf
course.
course, but
Yeah.
I loved it. Do you see many VIPs coming out to the Lido?
We do, but a lot of the folks are, you know, there's not a whole lot of superstars like you would see on TV and such. A lot of very successful people, but you know, I think some of them figured out it's just better to be rich than rich and famous.
Right, exactly, right. And you're 3.5 hours from Chicago, maybe. Is that about right?
Yep.
Yeah. And can anybody play the Lido, or do you have to stay on property in order to get a tee time, or is it members only?
Yeah, I think the Kaiser's navigated this very well because the routing's very tight. So to pack it full from start to finish would be, I mean, dangerous and hard to maintain. So what it is a private club, but if you're staying at Sand Valley or invited by a member, you can get a Lido tee time. So that's kind of, and but the course is too cool to not have people come play. So I thought they did very nice. And some of these collection areas are much tighter. Back to, you know, they wouldn't have designed this course in the modern era. So the level of play we have, they have 4 hours of resort tee times a day, 5 days a week. So chances are, if you're coming on a trip to Sand Valley, they'll be able to find you a tee time on the Lido. And the reservations team does a great job of navigating that. So they really do try their hardest. So I
And
thought it was a nice balance of the level of play the course could handle and making sure that folks got to see this really beautiful project.
Is it caddies required there at the Lido?
It is, yes. All the other courses are optional. We recommend them, but there are so many blind shots and it's very difficult to figure out where you're going. So for safety and pace of play, we do have required caddies on the Lido.
And is your program Evans Scholar program, or is it?
Yeah. We've had great success. And shoot, we've had three or four Evans Scholars a year since we were able to get that program up and running. And it's really neat to watch those young people work through that program. And the junior caddies are some of the coolest. A lot of them come in shy and not used to it. And they learn a lot. And what a great summer job. And then
Absolutely.
to be one of the the few that get the Evans scholarship. What a blessing. So,
right. That's cool. Plus,
yeah.
That's kind of in your backyard, which is neat.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know. Now, so how long would you say you've been fanatical about hickories?
Well, I mean, I really got into it in 2018, and since then, it's just been a slow, steady build. So I've been enthusiastic about it the whole time, but it's, you know, the deeper you get into it, the better it gets, and the more history you can patch together, and the more folks you meet that can teach you something. And so I'd say enthusiasm's been constant, but I guess my knowledge and network has grown the entire time.
And do you consider yourself a collector at this point?
I do, but we actually shy away from some of the most valuable stuff.
Sure.
Really, what we're looking for are good clubs to play and put back in people's hands. So we wouldn't want to take something that's super museum quality and then,
Right.
you know, we're
Sure.
smart enough to not go play that stuff.
Sure.
But even like Tom, I mean, I love a Tom Stewart iron, but those are so sought after by the competitive hickory, you know,
Right.
players. That I mean, we'll scoop them up if we can, but sometimes we'll kind of aim for that B grade club with good swing
Right.
weight, maybe some bounce on the sole, you know, a good sturdy, solid, straight shaft, and you know, those are the clubs that we really get excited about finding because we can guilt free restore that club and get it back on the course without you know really messing up a beautiful specimen of history.
Right. I gotcha. Now, you got to know John Henry Williams a little bit, didn't you, in the last few months? Maybe you played together at the U.S. Hickory Open. Do you know?
Yeah, so he's been very kind to me over phone and email, maybe for a year or more now. But we did get to meet in person this year with the U.S. Hickory Open at Kenosha, which was a beautiful venue. So I got to meet him this summer, and we did play a round of golf together and got to know each other a bit. And he's just, he's even better in person than he is, you know, on the phone. And for somebody that had never met me in person to be so generous with his knowledge and so kind,
That's John. Yeah.
I greatly appreciate
you know,
him.
He knows agronomy. He knows, he's
Yeah.
one of the world's best repair people in the hickory world.
Yeah.
Globally. I mean, he's incredible.
Yeah.
And we're lucky to have him out here. So we get to see him quite a lot.
Yeah.
But his work is second to none. It's phenomenal. He's been doing it for, I don't know, 40 years, something like that.
It's downright impressive. I certainly picked up a few clubs from him, and you know, half of those made it into my play bag.
Oh, good. Well, I was going to ask you, what's in your play set?
Well, so I have a base group of about five clubs that I don't take out just because I know how they'll behave. But then when we're fixing a bunch of clubs, a lot of the times when I play, I'll kind of be field testing as well.
Right.
But I do try and have, you know, five, six, seven clubs that I can depend on in case I wind up in a match or I'm going to go play and really want to perform well. But some of my go-tos, I have a Vulcan Brassey. And in one of the Hickory Collector books, there's a one-page advertisement from 1923. So I love that. It's got like a little smiley face looking insert on it. So that club has blown apart a few times. We just keep patching it back together and it behaves. I have a Croydon Mashie that's a real keeper. Big, it's got a tree trunk in it for a shaft. Mid-irons I've been in a little bit of limbo with. I had a smooth face Tom Stewart with just a little bit of extra beef right behind the sweet spot. That was a great club. But that shaft broke and I haven't got around to replacing it. So, you know, this is kind of when I start dabbling with other clubs we're fixing.
Right.
What else do I have that's an absolute standby? I have a McGregor jigger that pretty much stays put. But yeah,
What do you
it's
putt
kind of,
with?
what's that?
What do you putt with?
Lately, so I do have this is one of my nicer clubs, a Tom Stewart RTJ blade.
Oh, you do?
Yeah,
Wow.
so
Yeah.
that's a sweet one.
Yeah,
So
very nice.
I tend to game that, and then I found a semi mallet shaped, it's still heel shafted this past year, cast aluminum with, you know, with lead plugs in the back, and
Right.
it just says MR putter, maybe MR or initials, and then it, but that's the only markings on it, so I just call it Mr. Putter, and we get along pretty well. So it you know, as any good golfer, I have a few putters. That way I can always threaten them with timeout. You know, if they're not
Right,
behaving,
exactly.
they
Sure.
know the
We
deal.
all
They're
know that.
going to be on the bench.
Are you a low digit handicapper?
Yeah, I would say I'm around, well, I didn't play much this year, but I would 3 or 4 handicap with modern clubs and then, yeah, you know, add a few for Hickory.
Exactly. And what ball do you like to use when you're playing hickory?
I've dabbled, and I've played the McIntyre balls, and I've met Dr. Brown, and I think those are awesome. But for day-to-day golf, I like the Callaway. Chrome Soft or Super Soft is great. I played the Wilsons for a while. I think, while I love that soft compression, they don't seem to have the pop. And a lot of times I'll wind up playing against folks that are still playing modern clubs, and we may adjust the tees. I don't like playing the Pro V1s because of the firmness. That's kind of like the top level. That 90 compression is a little too firm. But if I needed to go play and potentially try and beat somebody, I might break out a Pro V1 and just get that extra couple yards. But I guess the Super Soft or Chrome Soft really seem to be that nice, well-rounded, happy medium.
I'm
How
partial
about
to
you?
those. I like the super soft, and I played the Wilson duo spin quite a bit, but I've landed on the super soft. It's just a solid, reliable ball. And I'm not a phenomenal golfer, but it works for me. I like that ball quite a bit.
It's got the best of everything, it seems like.
And Clark, have you tried Gutty Golf at all yet?
I have not dabbled yet. I have been setting aside some clubs. When you get a set, you might have a smooth face or a gutty club or two, so I'm kind of slowly, but as you might be picking up, I get kind of hot and heavy over stuff when I get into it. So I just try to kind of pace myself, but I have
That's
been
smart,
setting
Mark.
aside a bunch of what I believe are gutty era clubs.
You're not alone. I mean, that's a lot of us in this field are the same way. We go deep overboard on something for, I don't know, 6, 7 months,
Yeah, maybe that's
and
why
then
everybody
there's
gets
something
along.
else. Is there a historical person in golf history that you'd love to meet if that were possible?
Well,
Anybody you cherish or
I mean, it's cliche, but old Tom or Allen Robertson. So those, I mean, or just to watch him get in that argument on 18 of San Andrews. I've been fortunate to go over to Scotland one time. And we actually didn't play golf when we passed through St. Andrews. We just took the day to be tourists, basically. But boy, the feels you get walking through that town, and my Scotland knowledge is certainly not of any caliber, but I have a deep appreciation. But yeah, I guess I would take the easy out and say Old Tom off the top of my head. But if not, then certainly somebody in the Hickory era, and especially in that pioneering era of the golf professional would be really neat.
What are some of the common reactions you get to people that try hickory for the first time?
Well, by the time you convince them to try them, I feel like you've already done the hard part. Convincing them that you can go play them is probably the hardest part. But by the time they get the club in their hand and even take a practice swing, you start to see that giddiness and excitement. And then fingers crossed that they just pure one first try and they're hooked. That, especially if it's a brassy or one of the persimmon-headed clubs, that sound and sensation is, we know the feeling. It's like nothing else you've ever experienced in golf. And if you catch one flush, it is so surprising. It is still a golf club, so it shouldn't be too surprising, but they're just so amazed that it can produce a beautiful airborne shot like we're used to seeing. And then you add in that extra feeling when you flush one with the hickory and it gets up into your forearms. There's not as much to mute it, that sensation coming up. And if they hit a bad one, you just pat them on the back and say, well, it's a 100-year-old golf club. So the your expectations aren't as dramatic with a 100-year-old club. If you get one airborne, you feel like $1 million.
Is there a shot that you've hit with hickories that in your mind is your best shot ever with hickory golf?
Ooh, man, this is a tough one. I have to go through the memory banks a little bit. I did make a very, very, very long putt one time on Mammoth Dunes, number 10, which that green complex is kind of tucked in the sand. You kind of go up the hill there, and Michael Kaiser was in the group, so I felt like I got an extra gold star for pouring in a long bomb. And then one of the caddies in the group, Joe, very sadly passed away this past year. So that whole experience has a very special place in my heart. So he couldn't believe that I made the putt. So he was, I think, more excited than I was, just because he's seen that putt more than I have. So to do it with the hickory was very special, and that one will certainly stick with me.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Can you tell me about aspirations you have for Hickory Revival?
Yeah, we would like to figure out how to better introduce the vast majority of the golfing population that hasn't experienced Hickory Golf to Hickory Golf, and just to shed a little light on how cool the history of the game is, and that you can play these clubs. You know, there's no real deception. We're not up to anything special. We have just found that passion. And like I said, we really don't care if you go head over heels into Hickory Golf. We just think it's so neat that our sport has a part of our history that you can really step in and feel and experience. That's such a rarity. I mean, I can't really think of any parallels amongst other modern popular sports where you can appreciate the history, and such a deep and long and rich history. So we're just trying to spread that passion, and I think it's really good for the game of golf. So then from the PGA golf professional side, I think people get more excited about golf as they get into the history of the game. So it's multi-purpose, one part Hickory golfer and one part golf pro. And I've just always been a person that when I get jazzed on something, my favorite thing to do is to go and try and share that, which I know a lot of us are cut from that cloth. But that's it in a nutshell.
And you guys have a fairly active presence on social media, don't you?
Yeah, we try and stay pretty active out there. Kind of ebbs and flows sometimes, but yeah, folks, that's where people's attention goes a lot. And it's kind of ironic that just Hickory Golf on social media, but hey, that's where people are spending their time. So if the goal is to introduce them to it, then might as well be on there.
Have you thought at all about partnerships to help grow Hickory Revival? I wonder if there's any corporate or business partnerships, or even with other Hickory things. For instance, there's a feathery and gutty golf tournament in Illinois called the Oddball, and for the first time ever, we're going to bring it to the West Coast in
No way.
2026. And because it's such a brilliant idea, and there's a couple in Illinois that make feathery golf balls, and we're going to partner with them and bring that tournament to the West Coast for the first time, which is cool. But I bet you there's some great partnerships to build Hickory Revival, but it would just take some creativity and thought to surface what those might be.
Yeah, I mean, we're all ears, and right now we're trying to fix clubs as rapidly as we can, and our network is always expanding, so we're all ears. But yeah, I think that's beautiful creativity. What month of the year is that event going to be?
Well, I think in Illinois it is in the springtime. I think it's going to be in April, and
Okay.
our event will be near the end of August.
Okay. And that is, obviously with the Wisconsin Golf Pro schedule, traditionally my life outside of work kind of ends from April to early November. But it's just a slight scheduling thing.
I totally get it.
Obviously, everybody's got the same idea in the Midwest: play golf all summer. So
So, have you had a place in the world that you've played that has been maybe your favorite place to play?
yeah, I would. This one, boy, there's a lot of courses battling for first place, but I actually, despite working at some very awesome places, I love a good mom and pop honor box. And so when we were in Scotland, we did play some very nice courses, but we also played a lot of under the radar ones. And one of my favorites was a James Braid way up north, close to Thurso, Ray, Reay. And I could, it was 18-hole track. And I could probably play golf there for the rest of my life and be perfectly content. It was very, very cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. We did a 3-week trip to Scotland in 2022, and we did the same thing. We played the top courses and some of the really small mom and pop courses.
Yeah. Did
That
you have
was
a
fun.
favorite mom and pop over there?
Well, yeah, I mean it's in Campbelltown called Dunaverty.
Okay.
It's not far from Macrahanish Dunes.
Okay.
It's so remote. It's actually where Paul McCartney went when the Beatles broke up. That's how remote it is.
Oh my gosh.
And I don't think I've ever seen a golf course with as much elevation change as that course.
Really?
And you can see Ireland from the golf course, but it's just stunning the elevation change. It's got to be 150 feet or so of elevation change, which is
Man.
a lot. That's actually quite a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it just blew my mind. Most of the golf we played over there made me realize that golf is an adventure sport, or at least it was in
Yeah.
the 19th century. I don't know if you played Prestwick or any of the courses on the West Coast, but they would not build golf courses like that today. It was an adventure sport.
Yeah. No, I didn't get to the West Coast, but I think that's so cool, and I definitely appreciate walking the game.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, me too. What do you think it would take to bring the U.S. Hickory Open to Sand Valley?
Well, it I mean anything's possible. I will say the biggest hurdle would be that the place is so dang busy.
Yeah.
So it's I mean as soon as we open reservations, they're basically booked. So I would say just sheer availability. But generally speaking, everybody's on board for unique events. It's not like
Totally.
we wouldn't want to host it. It's just we're so fortunate to have so many golfers wanting to come to the property. Even getting in
Yeah.
our repeat big groups is tough. Folks that have
Yeah.
been coming to see us since the very beginning. So I would say availability would be the biggest hurdle, but it would be any one of the courses would be spectacular. I think
Yeah.
Sedge Valley with the par 68 could be very cool. Obviously the Lido, but may err on the side of just a flat beat down for the golfer. It's
Right, sure, yeah.
maybe I think Lido is best suited for match play, in my opinion. So stroke play can just get a little wild out there, but it would be a blast on any of the courses.
I was looking at the rates last night and they didn't seem unreasonable. $220 for a round at some of the courses out there. That doesn't seem unreasonable to me.
Yeah. And I mean, in the longer days, the second round's always your replay rate's half
Right.
off. So
Right.
we certainly try and, keep it in an area where folks can come and see us. So,
Yeah,
it
I
is a
was
great
impressed.
value. Yeah.
Yeah. How could people find you on social media and follow you?
Yeah. We're at Hickory Revival. And then it's hickoryrevival.com. And you can shoot us an email from there. I think I am C Willa, like Willard. Without the RD at the end, 1-4. So that's my personal one. But yeah, shoot us an email, hop on hickoryrevival.com, or it's howdy@hickoryrevival.com is our email address. And we're always happy to meet new folks and answer questions to the best of our ability. And that's the best way to get a hold of us.
Are you seeking donations or do you have enough stuff to work with?
I mean, we're always looking for clubs, and I think sometimes I think we're helping that person too. I mean, if anybody's, itching to get rid of clubs, we're not made of cash,
Sure, sure, sure,
we're
sure, yeah.
but yeah, as far as a loving, caring home where these clubs will make it back onto the golf course, I do think that's a service that we probably haven't fully tapped into yet. But yeah, that's our deal is to get them in people's hands and also for the club's sake. We didn't really touch on that, but I mean, it's a whole lot better than sitting in somebody's basement or
Right,
even worse, a
absolutely.
dumpster. You know what I mean? And
Right.
to get these clubs back on the course, even if it's not the very best play club. And, once you dive deep into Hickory Golf, it's a different world. But our
Sure.
goal is to save these clubs from a dumpster and get them back on the course where they were built to be. And then help that person who's never heard of Hickory Golf before say, go home and say they swung a 100-year-old golf club at the Lido, that's or wherever the golf course may be. So
Right.
those are our big goals. But yeah, I mean we're all ears. If you have something that you think might be of use to us and what we're up to, feel free to shoot us a
Sure.
note and we'll see if we can put it to good use.
What are you looking forward to in 2025?
Well, as we talked about with me kind of changing a million things in my life in 2024, I learned a ton. And so I'm excited to put some of those things into practice. I went out on a limb and took a wild hair, but now I'm excited to get out there, play more golf. I didn't play much golf in 2024 and just keep on pushing and get hickories in people's hands and have a good time doing it.
Cool. Well, I appreciate your time and thanks so much for joining us today.
Rob, thank you, sir. I really appreciate this. Great to meet you.
Yeah, you too. Stay well.
All righty.